Awesome. Ready.
Hey everyone, welcome to episode 145 of the Lift Free Diet Hard Podcast. I apologize. I went on an unplanned hiatus. So anybody who's a regular listener but wondering where have I've been, well, I was kind of busy getting a presentation ready for the Olympia, an official Olympia event. We had our event, the Evolve Strength Business and Coaching Conference, which was a big hit. And through it all, I had a couple of guests who just weren't able to make times. And schedule got crazy, and I just wasn't able to book stuff. But I'm back, and the plan is, as best I can, to get this back on track weekly. It is my intention at about episode 150, which is really lifetime 300 under the old format, is to actually shift this a little bit to speak to a bit more of a general audience, but it'll still be valuable to coaches. So hang on for that. But today, I've got Steve Kam, and I'm excited because Steve and I have been interacting on social media a little bit. We both spoke at Jonathan Goodman's virtual event, the Obvious Choice Summit, which was this fall. And you are the author of the book, If I Level Up Your Life, and you are the founder of Nerd Fitness, which I definitely want to tap into. So just great to have you. Welcome, Steve.
We've been circling each other for quite a while now and have even bounced so many voice memos back and forth, which I have to thank you for. I feel like I've got to know you even more asynchronously. So yeah, man, I'm just really happy to be here and excited to nerd out with you.
I love the fact that you said the asynchronous communication because I mean, I'm 45, so I'm of the generation where, you know, we used to, way before texting and cell phones and all that stuff, you know, we would call, you know, friends, right? Like you didn't know where people would be, go to university. So you would just like run into them or you would like call them and say, all right, I'll plan to meet you at this time, blah, blah, blah. No texting. And that was usually pretty synchronous communication. And it's funny, like I don't like outside of these podcasts or seeing people in person, I don't like synchronous communication. I don't like people calling me, right? I had some.
Not only that, but I started Nerd Fitness specifically because I didn't like having to be a certain place at a certain time and be reliant on like other people's schedules. So I was like, this is perfect. I'll become an online writer and do that on my own schedule. And then I've since come back around to saying like, oh yeah, wait a second, human connection and interaction and making time for interviews and conversations such as these are actually really valuable and make the rest of my time way more enjoyable.
And it's one of the reasons why I love this podcast. I've been doing it for so long. So quick, funny story. I didn't realize the connection initially, but I've been binging audiobooks now for many, many, many years. And I actually did Level Up Your Life as an audiobook years ago. And I just didn't like really make the connection because obviously the premise was very interesting at the time, certainly. And so, yeah, I've actually done your book years ago. So
that's so funny.
I guess I had a few things I really wanted to kind of get into, but I love the whole concept of the big yet pretty underserved, at least, you know, in the minds of most people, niche of gamers. And I think gamers can probably be expanded into tech industry people anyway, because I'm guessing there's a high degree of overlap. So, I mean, there's a bunch of questions. I'll kind of fire a bunch at you and I can let you answer them as you go. It's like how prevalent is fitness in the gaming and tech world? Is there growing awareness, interest, and action, or is it a really tough group to mobilize?
Well, I mean, I can share, you know, so I started Nerd Fitness, or I bought the domain in 2007, which is like, you know, 100 years ago in internet time. I wasn't trying to capitalize on a trend of like nerdy being cool. I wasn't trying to ride a wave that I thought was coming. I was just a dork that played a lot of EverQuest and games on Nintendo and escaped into books and movies and felt like there was nobody speaking to this group of people who were probably ashamed about going to a gym or really self-conscious about exercising in front of other people and didn't want to make mistakes. So I was like, all right, well, is anybody doing this? So I Googled nerd and fitness and nothing popped up. So I just bought the domain and started writing. And then later it was like, you know, Marvel takes off, Disney acquires Star Wars, Disney acquires Marvel. all of a sudden being super jacked and nerdy is cool. And I was like, oh, like, all right, that kind of worked out. Certainly was not my intent. It was just like, this is an underserved group of people who I am a part of and I want to help them. So first and foremost, I started there and then have kind of evolved over the years to try and figure out different ways to help this group of people who, you know, probably don't resonate with the typical Instagram fitness influencer and certainly will never walk into a CrossFit gym, helping them get okay with picking up something heavy and maybe eating a vegetable every once in a while.
Not Sam Sulek stuff's not reaching them. You got me thinking, obviously, because you're right. There's this massive shift. I grew up playing Final Fantasy, Dragon Warrior, Ultima, old school Nintendo RPGs, Legend of Zelda, which most people are kind of more familiar with. And that got into things like Ogre Battle. Most people listening are not going to know what the hell that is, right? That's a strategy RPG.
Obviously, I played Ogre Battle.
I'm not surprised. I knew you would know what that was. I was really, really hardcore into World of Warcraft for 3 years between 14 and 17 years ago. And there was actually an inflection where I realized that I couldn't commit and find the time to get back into fitness the way I'd always been while still playing very like full on addicted and immersed in World of Warcraft, which surprises people about me. So I had to make a choice and I actually quit playing World of Warcraft, leaned hard into fitness. And it was from that I actually got hired off a gym floor after the staff kept bugging me. What I love about what you described is you didn't choose your niche. You just leaned into something you enjoyed and your niche really built around you, chose you, which is the misconception I think a lot of people make when they go, well, I think that if I choose 33 to 35 year old single lawyer mothers who have 2.2 children, then, or like, you know, dads who are like 40. Okay. Like I get that stuff. And I think that can work. Like one of my guys, Jeff, he works with, you know, a lot of his stuff is dads, right? And because he's a dad, it's a natural place for him. But I still think a lot of people are arbitrarily trying to choose a niche that they think will work, as opposed to coming at it from a place of like, I literally love this. I live this. You can see above me, I'm going to start posting stuff on YouTube, but this one won't be YouTube. But you'll see my Witcher figures, like Geralt's up there, right? Henry Cavill, the king of the nerds, who has made it even more cool to be super nerdy.
Yeah, it's funny. I had bought nerdfitness.com. I got certified as a trainer. I had started to write, but I was still playing a lot of EverQuest 2 at the time. And my homemade computer, actually, I fried the motherboard on it. I think I had overclocked it and the computer fried and I didn't have the money to fix it. And like, that was kind of my call to action of like, hey, you can't play 30 hours a week of EverQuest and work a full-time job and do Nerd Fitness. Like I had to take a break from video games until I finally got Nerd Fitness off the ground. And I took maybe 2 years off. And then when I finally started making some money with Nerd Fitness and writing, a friend of mine walked down the street. He lived in the same neighborhood. The night that I made my first sale of an online course, he walked down the street with I think it was an EverQuest 2 install disc and a beer. And he's like, we've been waiting. I was like, dude, I can't get back in because I have zero self-control in those areas. So I've had to like put pretty serious guardrails in place about how I think about video games now, because I have so many other things I'm also trying to do.
I'm the same. Like I can't do the MMORPG. Like I loved World of Warcraft. I truly loved what that experience was. It was rich. I have a lot of positive memories of it, but that can't fit into my life. So I usually have one game that I will pick away at sometimes. Like I'm most of the way through my fourth playthrough of Witcher 3. I would rather go back and do something familiar and revisit old friends, something I love, than to do a lot of new stuff. I'm on playthrough number 2, kind of early-ish in Cyberpunk. Same company made them. They're similar. So like there's something to that. People always talk about Elden Ring. Sounds great. Everybody raves about it. Super hard. And I don't know. We'll see. And there's something else. Oh, God, Baldur's Gate 3. I mean, I played Baldur's Gate 1 and 2 on computer. Love those games. I hear everybody's raving about 3. So eventually I'll probably do 3 on a console. Because I just don't, like, all my stuff is Apple now. So like I don't have the computers for, I'm not going to run that off of, a laptop, right? Not going to happen. But there's still room for it in my life, but it's got to have like a boundary that I can pick up and leave off. And one of those things is it can't be an online community that I'm needing to come back to and be a part of. The online community I have is already in like my social media anyway, and I would rather take care of that community than a guild in World of Warcraft.
Exactly. Yeah, there's a Shane Parrish, a friend of mine, just put out a great book called Clear Thinking, and in it he talks about rules and making decisions. And it's something, you know, I talked to Shane about this years ago and shared some of my rules. And, you know, I know he has a ton of rules, and it's been really effective for him and for me as well. But when it comes to playing video games, when it comes to strength training, it's like you can either have to make the decision every day, or you make the decision once as a rule, and then you just live by that rule. So for me, it's very simple. It's like, I do not play online video games. Like, that's a rule that I have. So whenever like a great online multiplayer game, it's like, that's awesome. Like, I'm excited for those people to enjoy that. It's not for me. I don't have to agonize whether or not I'm going to play it. Instead, it's like, I'm going to play an adventure game with a cool story that is going to be 15 to 20 hours, and I can play through it in a week or 2 weeks, and then take my life back for the next 3 months, and then take a break, and then jump into the next game. So same thing with exercise. I strength train 4 days a week. Like, that's just the rule. I take a day off. You know, I train Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, pretty much without fail. And like, that's just a rule that I have. So I'm not having to agonize like, oh, is it a training day or not? No, like, these are the rules. I should probably follow them.
I like this. And it's a good way of like putting a framework on something I've long thought of that I thought differently. Because I think in terms of options, right? So it's, I think of what are the options that you allow yourself. It's really the same thing. So a good example of that is a lot of people use Skip the Dishes or Uber Eats or delivery apps, right? For me, that is not an option. I do not have them downloaded. I won't, right? The only ways I'm ordering anything is the two old fashions. One is pizza, and two is Chinese food. And I do that maybe once a year as a treat, right? The good stuff, not the mall food court stuff. That's a metaphor I use a lot. It's this, if you don't have these rules in place, if things are an option for you, then in moments of fatigue, because this is what you're talking about. You're talking about when you're mentally tired, when you're stressed out, you will default to those options that are on the table. So for me, first of all, I don't think about going and getting McDonald's. Like, it's just not a thing for me. I don't enjoy the idea, right? I might have McDonald's once or twice a year, circumstantially, right? But for a lot of people, the idea of going and driving to McDonald's is an option for dinner or a snack, okay? At least in that situation, there's effort. You have to get in your vehicle, especially in Canada, the winter, it's really cold. That's not really a fun thing. Drive there, go through drive-through, et cetera, whatever, right? So at least in that scenario, there's a lot more friction and effort necessary. With the delivery apps, you actually removed all that stuff. So it becomes simple. Open the phone, push a button, boom, it's going to show up at my door. So for something like that, in a moment of fatigue and stress, to say no to that and go and cook becomes daunting. So having the rule that I do not order anything on a delivery app, and there are some people that use it responsibly, but most people don't, let's be honest. What's going to end up happening? Most of the time, they're going to default to the lowest friction behavior that gives them the highly palatable, you know, high calorie, high fat, high sugar food, and eat enough of it across their week, their month, et cetera, that it's not fulfilling their health goals.
Yeah, not only that, but you know, I think there's there's that aspect of it. And for that person, my wife and I batch cook our meals on, you know, once or twice a week. So that are the lazy option. And like, all things considered, I would so much rather sit on my ass and play video games. Like, I'm not overly inspired. Like, I don't just want to run out and run a marathon. And like, I would much rather sit on the couch and order food. However, if you have food pre-made, and after the end of a day, you know, like you said, we're talking about decision fatigue here. At the end of the day, and you're just like, man, I'm hungry and I don't feel like cooking. If the default option is the desired option, you're going to be more likely to pick it. So for me, if there's already food in the fridge that's prepared, that is so much faster. Putting it on a plate and heating it up for a minute in the microwave, that's faster than waiting 30 to 45 minutes for delivery. When I'm, you know, if I'm already hungry now, making that default action. Now there's that. And then the other aspect of this is like, if you're a single parent and, or you're, you know, divorced and on a weekend, your kids want to go to McDonald's, and that's the day that you have with them. Like, we don't need to also add shame or guilt to it. You can just decide in that moment that you are optimizing for something other than food. You're optimizing for your kids and the play place and whatever, and then move on with your life right after that. It's when it becomes like that challenge is when this ordering food all the time becomes the habit or becomes the routine that we get in trouble. So those pre-made decisions, those rules, those guidelines, and then removing kind of that extra morality layer that we often add to these decisions can be pretty helpful too.
And I really do like that phrase, pre-made decisions. And so you and I work within those same kind of constructs. We've just used slightly different wording sometimes, and I really like your framework for it. This, I think, is going to be valuable for everybody to think about, because this actually, I think, is fundamental to almost everything about nutrition, especially, but certainly the exercise. You talked about your weekly ritual. I think if everybody made these rules for themselves, and again, you have to be reasonable with where you are in the process to what rules are, because if you set these rules arbitrarily difficult, it's like people love to shit on 75 hard. I think that's kind of lazy, like low-hanging fruit, blah, 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 that trainers get on with. Here's my thing with 75 hard. I've never endorsed it. I've never done it. And I do not think it's the answer for most people, but it probably is the answer for certain people. It's the people who are ready for that rule framework can and probably should use it, right? For most people, I think they're setting the bar way too high. They're setting themselves up to fail. I've seen this with people I know in my world where they say they're going to do this thing. And it's like the person who, I'm going to start January 1st, right? We see this all the time. And then they plan some unrealistic, unsustainable, clean dietary behavior. That's a dramatic departure from how unrestrained and unstructured it was before. And, I'm going to go to the gym every day again, which is not a skill set they actually have. And then they go into this stuff and they white knuckle it for, maybe they're lucky to get through 2 weeks, maybe they get through six. And then all of a sudden, what I really think is going on, and I actually think there's a narrative here, is I think most of those people set themselves up to fail, consciously or subconsciously, to be able to say, hey, I tried. I'm not the kind of person who can do this. So therefore, what they're really doing is they're alleviating the emotional discomfort of not making the effort for a little while, because they now have this story, they have this proof to say, look, I can't do this. I'm not this person, right? Because they have this ridiculous idea of what fitness and nutrition actually is. And instead, we just have to set rules around what is a reasonable step of progress from what our current state of lifestyle is.
Sure. I not only that, I think there is something to that as well, where it's like people try those things, but they're afraid. So like they go like halfway, kind of like half-ass it, or they go like halfway. So that way, when inevitably life happens and they give up, they can still say in their head, like, well, I could have done it, but I didn't go all the way. And it's like, it's scary to put yourself out there and to try something with all of your being. And then if you fail, I think the shift then happens, the shift that needs to happen rather. It's like, oh, I failed at 75 hard. It's like, yeah, get in line behind the other 99% of people that did too. You didn't fail 75 hard or whatever it's called. That was not the program for you. There's this great quote. I think it's often attributed to Churchill, but it's success is moving from failure to failure without a loss of enthusiasm. And I think for a lot of these people, it's like, hey, I tried this thing. It didn't work. It doesn't mean that you're a failure. It means congratulations. You found the type of exercise that, or the strategy or the workout plan that doesn't work for you. Here's your permission. Like, I'll write it on a note. I'm not even a doctor, but I'll write it for you. That says you never have to follow that plan again, but you got to try something. So let's try something different.
This stuff is really insightful. And I hope that everybody listening is kind of going, oh yeah, I got some clients like this. Or if you're one of the more general population listeners, enthusiasts, kind of going, all right, this stuff, hey, this is helpful to me. Now, I want to go back to some of the gamer stuff, because there's some stuff I want to tease out there. Are gamers coming around fitness more, and are they more interested fitness consumers, or is it just that there's enough of them that if you operate in that space by by virtue of like a certain percentage, some of them want to consume fitness. Like, what's going on in that world? And maybe what are some of the stereotypes and what are some of the obstacles that that world deals with?
Sure. I mean, I think when I started this 15 years ago, that's just, again, so crazy to me. When I started 15 years ago, the gamer population was probably significantly less interested as a percentage of the population in getting fit. But I knew there were some of them that were, like, that Venn diagram did overlap. I was a gamer and I wanted to get fit and I thought other people would too. I think now 15 years later, the percentage of people that play video games has just dramatically grown because those of us that grew up with Nintendos are now in our middle age. I guess I'm 39. I don't know if that qualifies me as middle age or not, but you know,
when we were kids, that sounded pretty middle age. I don't know.
Sure.
There are days that I sort of feel middle age or days where I feel really old. And there are days that I still feel very much like a teenager. So
yes. Well, no, yes. But the days when I feel like a teenager, it's a guarantee that the day after that, I will feel middle aged for sure in some capacity. I lost my train of thought. Okay, wait. So
my bad.
No problem. I was talking about, oh, right, gamers. Okay, so now gamers, right, as a percentage, they are now in their 30s, 40s, 50s, having grown up with video games, but now they have kids, they've got married, they have put on the weight after getting an office job and maybe having a little bit more success professionally. And now it's that population that has grown up and is interested in bettering themselves, and they can resonate. You know, they might not resonate again with the people that are total gym rats, but they can resonate with, regular people that are just trying to live a little bit better. And that's the angle that I try to come at it from for Nerd Fitness. Now, there's also this subset of the population. They're like Twitch streamers or e-gamers that are like hardcore into their health and fitness. They have developed carpal tunnel in their wrists and they need to make sure they're sleeping enough and hydrating properly and eating correctly. So that's becoming a larger percentage of, I think, those types of gamers as well. So there's that angle. And then there's also just the regular Joe Schmoes that are playing Madden or Call of Duty or World of Warcraft or Fortnite. My mom plays Candy Crush on her phone. Like, video games are everywhere now. And, I talk a lot about gaming. I think there is some interesting parallels there that I've been able to, really fall in love with over the past 15 years. But really, what I'm trying to do is help people kind of get out of their own way so that they can do the things that are going to make them healthier, happier, and have more fun and still be as nerdy as they want to be.
Well, you just shattered sort of, a floating misconception. And then I think I even led with it, even though I know better. It's that the gamer is this narrow like subtype, when in fact gaming has become so accepted in the mainstream. And you alluded to a big reason why nerd culture as a whole is now very popular. We have these representations in Marvel, we have Star Wars, all this sort of stuff. And this the companies, like obviously Disney being now the one who gobbled them all up, understands that these are not fringe properties where, when Star Wars was initially released, there were some concerns about like sci-fi as a viable like thing in Hollywood. Now it's those movies oftentimes are the biggest money makers out of everything. What, Avatar, right? And yep. All of the Star Wars properties. And I mean, there's a lot of the Marvel stuff that it's comic book, but there's plenty of sci-fi whipped up in there, like Guardians of the Galaxy straight up, right? So I think gaming's gone mainstream, which is positions you in a really great space. There's an element to this. So I wanted to hear more about your process. So I've actually trained a bunch of people who I would consider to be tech gamer, traditionally. And it's the fact that despite the fact that my stature does not immediately make me look like it, I do wave around the Witcher stuff, as a piece of the puzzle. And I talk about I love Dungeons and Dragons. I got Dungeons and Dragons books here, right below this thing, right? And down on my mantle. But when I show that stuff, it helps bridge a gap between someone that might have initially not thought that we had much in common. And once I've got the fundamentals of their movement down, because I still, like I said, I train in person, most of the time we're talking is not nitpicking about nutrition. It's not nitpicking about form. We have to bridge it somewhere. And we actually literally talk about, I have several clients do the the replay of World of Warcraft when they brought back Classic. And I came up through Burning Crusade. So anybody who knows it, Burning Crusade, the Lich King is when I played, right? But vanilla. So I had some clients who were either going back or playing it the first time. And I got to have this great nostalgic trip through World of Warcraft to get and talk about my experience while they're enjoying it. And it became this really fun experience for them to return to. And I just happened to sneak a lot of exercise in while we're talking about World of Warcraft. So has that been your experience?
So I think how I would think about coaching people and training people now compared to 15 years ago is like night and day. And I can attribute most of the evolution. So we have a coaching program at Nerd Fitness. I think we have 15 or 20 coaches, coaching 1,500 clients, something like that. And we have this hive mind of coaches that share, our Nerd Fitness or Team Nerd Fitness coaches, they share their, this client is interested in this thing. Does somebody else in the team have a template for, they're trying to run their first 5K and also they love Dungeons and Dragons, or, hey, they're trying to get a handstand. So we're going to make it themed around the Upside Down from Stranger Things. So I think the thing that in the past, when it was just me, I would have said, hey, this is the way to do things. We're going to strength train. You're only going to pick up barbells. And machines are bad, and you should probably eat more like a caveman than you should eat like a regular diet. And this is the way. And I got tons of success stories, but I didn't realize it was like 95% of the people that I was leaving behind that didn't fit that mold. Now at Nerd Fitness, with our coaching program, we're so good at meeting you where you are. Instead of saying, this is how we do things, we say, these are our like overall philosophies. Walk me through how you eat right now. Tell me what kind of equipment, if any, you have. And like, let's talk about your situation at home. And based on those things, we kind of MacGyver a situation, MacGyver a workout program. Like, instead of this is where you need to be, we go down or over to where they are and then pull in the nerd references that they might love so that it feels truly built for them. And then it's, it's like, man, hey, all you have access to is a Smith machine at your gym. Like, fine, we're training with a Smith machine. And that is 97% of the way towards what we're trying to do. Like, sure, maybe a free floating barbell would be better. But they're probably not going to do that because they don't have one. So this is what we're going to do instead. And they are fasting for Ramadan. Like, okay, like let's meet you at that level and let's build a nutritional plan that fits into those things. Like there's no one way to do it. Mm-hmm. And that was the way that I used to think and have since come around to it and now have the wisdom of, 20 coaches who have taught me and through our clients and how we've been able to help them have learned so much more personally for myself and not just for like helping people with health and fitness, but like how I do my life as well. Cause like life is always going to get in the way. So that's the type of stuff that I can't get enough of. And where all of my time, energy, resources are going into is just like studying and researching and learning more about that stuff. Cause that's just, that's like what the majority of people are struggling with.
That's an amazing evolution. I think that transcends virtually anybody in the industry. I came up through on bodybuilding magazines and bodybuilding and clean eating ideology and idealism. And, pretty quickly I started finding the more evidence-based strength and conditioning side of stuff. And then I got into the evidence-based nutrition side. And so I left behind some of the old beliefs and started getting really hungry to learn this stuff. So I don't think my experience was necessarily all that different. I probably was a lot more yes, no, black, white, right, wrong about the tactical elements of training. And everything you just described aligns very, very closely with the way that I approach this stuff too.
Yeah, I mean, we're always learning, right? I think there's another great newsletter that I follow called Stratechery, and Ben Thompson is a writer. He writes about literally just tech stuff and has built an unbelievable following. But he sent an email the other day, and throughout that email was like, this is where I got this wrong. This is where I was incorrect about this assumption 6 months ago. Here's where this other thing, I say sometimes like amateurs are like so convinced that they're right, or they're seeking confirmation of their current ideology, and experts go out of their way to try to be slightly less wrong every day. So I used to be certainly in that former camp of like, nope, eat paleo, eat clean, lift heavy, and realizing like, oh, like I might have been helping people, but I was helping them for the wrong reasons. And now it's like, I gladly share like, hey, I was wrong for my rationale in these areas. This is what I now believe. And I hope 10 years from now that I've come to learn even more. And I think people respect you more when, instead of like digging your heels in and trying to continue down a path that you know is incorrect, tell people like, hey, I didn't know what I didn't know. And now that I do, I'm changing my mind. That's the sign of growth and should be appreciated, because like, if we're not trying to get better and less wrong, then like, what are we doing here?
So is that bottle of scotch over your left shoulder paleo? People listening can see.
No, it's definitely not. It's from my bachelor party. It's like my friend showed up with this Costco sized bottle of Macallan. It's gigantic. It's like, it's 1.5 or 1.75 liters, which I didn't realize they sold Macallan in that size.
So. Did I? That must've been very expensive. Well, like everybody's background says something about them. So I mean, you've got the Captain America shield and you've got a bottle of scotch and a bunch of your book. So there's Zelda, a message
Tolkien,
behind
it. Yeah.
Oh, love old Tolkien stuff. Real quick note, sort of like there's a question I want to get into, but you just made me remember. So I live in Edmonton. So BioWare is one of the big video game companies of, you know, create a lot of great things. Like they're the ones who actually did, what is it? Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic, the first
one. Oh, great game.
Right. And obviously they're the Dragon Age ones and Mass Effect. So I've actually trained a couple of people who worked for BioWare. It wasn't for a really long duration, but I trained David Gator, who was the lead developer of the Dragon Age series before he left BioWare. So it's kind of cool, some of the people I've gotten to work with. And anyway, so where I want to go with this pivot to was, I want to talk about augmented reality. So both the past and the future. And when I say that and someone doesn't know what I'm talking about, well, Pokemon Go. Like, that's kind of the thing that really blew up. And I was very, very positive about Pokemon Go. I want to hear your thoughts. So, like, hey, what do you think about Pokemon Go, what it did, its relationship to getting people active? And what do you think is the future potential of augmented reality getting more people active?
So I when Pokemon Go came out, I was living in New York City. And the amount of Pokemon surrounding my apartment building was so much so that I did it for 2 weeks and I did no work because I was too busy roaming the city. And then I had to uninstall it. Like I couldn't keep doing it. So like, I love the idea. I love that it gets people outside. I love that it gets them walking and moving. I actually, our head of product at Nerd Fitness, Matt, never stopped playing. He's like in the level where like, he like goes and like competes in tournaments and has like a roster and goes to like in virtual gyms and stuff. And like, so he's been playing for years now, him and his kids now play together. So I think that's amazing. Like literally anything that gets you off your butt and moving. I think the challenges might be, you have to find a way to develop and for some people they do, other people they don't, but like I can relate this to me trying to build a meditation habit. I think for a lot of people, maybe with Pokemon Go, they start, but by the end of it, because they're gamers, they might find themselves getting into their car and just driving to each location just to collect the Pokemon. And like, they're going for the end goal, forgetting why they started doing it in the first place. So you have to combine that extrinsic motivation, which is, I want to get the next Pokemon. I want to level up. I want to compete in a tournament. And combine that with that intrinsic motivation of, oh, wait a second, when I go for a walk for 30 minutes every day to go catch Bulbasaur or whoever somewhere out in the wild, or Mewtwo, like when you go out and catch, I only know Pokemon from like the original Red and Blue series. But that, oh, I feel better about myself when I go for a walk and I'm more calm and I'm less anxious and life feels a little bit better. That's interesting. Even if I wasn't playing Pokemon Go, I should continue this habit of walking because it improves my life. So like, that's the switch that has to, because then all of a sudden, like you miss a few days, you're behind on Pokemon Go. And all of a sudden, like you didn't build that intrinsic habit of exercise. For me, I meditated with, I think it was Headspace for like 6 months straight, did not miss a day because I wanted that little badge in my account that it was like a little brain with, you know, biceps. And I was like, this is awesome. And then one day I was traveling an international flight or something, and I realized I had missed my streak, and my 184 day streak was gone. And I didn't meditate again for like 3 years. Cause I was like, what's the point? I can't build the streak. What's the, and it's like, dude, you didn't start Headspace to build a streak. Like, you started Headspace to meditate, but like, I was trying to win at meditating instead of realizing like the whole point is to not win. The point is to sit there quietly, allow yourself to feel your feelings and think your thoughts and survive. So there is something really interesting about intrinsic and extrinsic motivation that I think AR, augmented reality, or VR, you know, playing Beat Saber could be really, really interesting. The hope is that you do it long enough and you develop that intrinsic motivation or that feeling of like, hey, not only am I leveling up in this game, but I feel like I'm leveling up in real life. That's really important for me too.
So but let's take this a little further. We hear stories about where the gamification of these sort of things can become maladaptive. Do you think there's potential for that?
Oh yeah. I mean, there's a great article out there. I think it's some guy was doing like Duolingo. He's like, Duolingo turned me into a monster because he was just so addicted to leveling up. And if he missed a day, the owl would yell at him. I don't think he ever actually learned how to speak like an actual word of that language, but he got really good at the gamification elements of it, which I would imagine might be the majority of people sometimes in some of these games. Like they are just focused on the points and they sign in and they don't actually do the thing that they're trying to do in the first place. So I think that is the case, but for there, hopefully there are enough people that develop that intrinsic motivation in addition to get excited about the leveling up and the building a streak and whatnot.
You hear these stories, this popped up in books where someone had a step counter and they some sort of gamified step counter. And they were just like shy of some sort of threshold. So instead of going to bed or doing something important, they're like walking up and down their stairs. And then they get another ping. Oh, you sure only like 100 more steps and you get this, these ridiculous things. So they kept doing it. So there's some crazy stories about people doing ridiculous amounts of steps in this very maladaptive, like addicted sort of way that completely defied the spirit of what you're really trying to do. And I think there's potential for that to backfire.
Yes, of course. Now also, like if somebody tries these games and they love them and it gets them out and walking in a way that they had never have in the past, by all means, go nuts. That is amazing. If you're somebody that has an addictive personality and find that you're doing these things for the wrong reason, that might be a great thing to talk with a licensed mental health professional about. I certainly have been in a situation where I'm like, oh, I didn't hit my 10,000 steps. I'm at 9,990. All right, I'll just move my arm around while lying in bed. It's like, that, did you really need to do that? Like, it's no different. Like, you're not actually, you know, it's the extra fraction of a calorie that I burned is negligible. The threshold of 10,000 steps is completely arbitrary. But it can serve as a decent marker for some and not for others. Just like calorie counting is amazing for some people and for others who might have a history of disordered eating. Like the last thing we want them to do as a coaching client is to get meticulous about weighing their food and tracking it because they have had instances of that in the past. So the important thing, I think, in each of these scenarios is that every one of these options is a tool and it might not be the right tool for you. So it's perfectly acceptable to say like, thank you, but no, you're not quite right. Like that's something that is not for me and move on to the next thing. It's when you try to shoehorn yourself into this, the way that you think you're supposed to do things, or you, like you said, you kind of take the wrong lesson from the habit you're building and have it focused on the wrong, you know, you're playing with the wrong scorecard when it comes to what you're trying to build.
All right. With a little bit of time we've got left before I get into my next client, I guess the other thing I was curious about was, you know, your book. What has your book done for your career, your ability to connect with and drive, I guess, your niche, but everybody to you? And are there any misconceptions that trainers have about what a book means, you know, to a career?
Sure. So I learned a lot about writing this book. So for reference, I wrote it in 2016. I started writing it in 2014, came out in 2016. It was published by Rodale. They have since been acquired by another publisher, and I actually just got the rights back to my book. So The reason you can't buy it right now on Amazon is because I need to figure out if I'm going to put out an updated version of it or just republish it as is. But the rights have reverted back to me. So I think the things it did for me, I learned how to write a book, and I learned how to necessarily not launch a book. I think I learned the right things about writing. I certainly became a better writer. I had to budget my time better. I learned that if you just sit there in front of your computer, words don't magically appear. You actually have to do the work of writing every single day. It connected me with a lot of new people. It's a great way for people to kind of dip their toe in the water of your philosophy and see if it's for you. You know, our coaching program is fairly expensive. We have a month or a yearly membership for, the people that want to be part of our private community at Nerd Fitness. But there are other people that just found out about me recently, or they hear me on a podcast. They're like, what is this guy all about? That's where a book can be really, really helpful. I can't really talk about, I may or may not be working on another book-shaped project that I can't necessarily talk about yet. I learned a lot the first time around, and I'm excited about continuing to write and share. I heard it once said that books are the networking event for introverts. Mm-hmm. Which I thought was so perfect. I'm certainly an introvert. Going to events full of people I don't know is unbelievably anxiety inducing for me. Standing on stage makes me want to throw up. But if somebody, reads my book, they reach out to me and say like, hey, I loved your book. Can you come on this podcast? Or, hey, like, we'd love to connect about this. I'm like, absolutely. No problem. Would love to do it. So it's a great calling card. It's a great way to connect with other people. It gives you something to rally around, and it teaches you a lot about yourself. It's not a Instagram post that you can put together in a day. It's not a YouTube video that you can put together in a week. It is a multi-year process, especially if you go the traditional route. You have an editor to be responsible to. I actually really enjoyed that. I've been my own boss for 15 years, and having somebody else that I am now accountable to has been really, really enjoyable, especially somebody that is really good at writing and points out all of the things that you do incorrectly in your writing can be very valuable in making you a better writer. So I've taken all of those lessons and have started to reapply them to the content I'm putting out regularly on Instagram, Threads, all the newsletters, et cetera.
You radiate positive energy. I mean, I'm not surprised that you do really well. Obviously, you have a bigger team under you than I even knew. Like, I didn't actually know how your business even was structured. And there's a humility in the evolution of your career. So I've actually really enjoyed this and very, very grateful to be able to share you as an authority and a resource to everybody who's listening here. So I can't, encourage people enough to go and dive into it. At the very least, start following your social media. So I think you have two major Instagram accounts, right? But where can people find you?
Yeah. So, I mean, if you want to get in touch with me, it's Steve Kamb, StevKamb on Instagram and Threads primarily. I love words first. So that's probably what you'll see of mine is just words on a screen. That's what I love to do more than anything. And then also, Nerd Fitness is on Instagram. I have newsletters. I write both at Steve Kamb and at Nerd Fitness. I'm just really happy. And, I've learned a lot in 15 years, not only about health and wellness, but also how to run a business and how to not run a business. So it's been an adventure, and I'm looking forward to the next 15 years too.
Me too. I love that we get to do this stuff. One of my big passions, the reason why I've done this podcast for a long time is, this has always been a fun free give back for coaches. And as I work on pivoting it to a bit more of a mainstream audience, I still want to be a really great resource for coaches. I'm going to have you back, obviously, when I shift formats. If anybody listening is kind of curious about that, shoot me a message. I'd love to hear from you. But please go follow Steve. Go check out what he's doing. And, that's just one more great resource that I trust, people that I trust also endorse, like Jonathan Goodman, which goes a long way as well. So I hope you guys will go and enjoy Steve. Everybody listening, like I said, I apologize for the gap here. I'm going to work out over the next few weeks to get back to being consistent. I've got a really crazy schedule still, and I'm trying to take downtime. I genuinely felt a bit burned out the later part of this year. I got hurt, a couple of injuries just accumulated, weird things that I'm like, all right, that's just my signal to me. And I want you guys to be alert to this, where I think I was running too hot sympathetic nervous system activation, not parasympathetic enough, not downregulating that enough. And, you know, I think that led to some creeping up injuries. I'm not any younger. Can't always do the same things I used to. So, you know, I hope if any of you guys have had the same experience, you'll message me, we'll chat about it. And I'm working on, you know, some other resources through my media to be a better service to you guys, including in the near future, doubling these episodes. I'm going to start putting them on my YouTube channel to do more there. So everybody, again, thank you for tuning in, Steve. I can't say enough kind stuff. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. And yeah, anybody, please reach out, hit me up on one of those platforms. Would love to hear from you. And if I can help in any way, please let me know.
Thanks, everybody.